Truck Stops, a Pac-12 podcast brought to you by Home Field Apparel. I am your host, Reed. No Carlos today. It's just me and Avery. How you doing, Avery?
I'm doing better than the Pac-12 is probably right now.
Yes.
And by that, I mean I'm very sick and probably should go to bed.
Yeah, you're hanging on. The Pac-12 is hanging on. We are left with just USC and Juju Watkins to carry us the rest of the way. If you're wondering why you should care about me and Avery's basketball thoughts specifically, hopefully you're a patron and checked out our pre-bracket thoughts. We gave a lot of super helpful advice. We're extremely correct in that preview. No, just kidding. But
how's your bracket, Reed?
My bracket is atrocious. Both of my brackets are atrocious. I had Oregon State winning the women's bracket. That's where we're going to start. But first, like this YouTube video. If you're tuning in live, subscribe to our channel. Obviously, as you've heard before, if you're on Apple or Spotify, leave us a five-star review there. It helps in some way. I don't know. Carlos told me to say that, so I'm going to do it. Let's dive into it. The first game, the biggest game we want to react to after our two-week hiatus here is the one that we all just saw, hopefully. Oregon State, South Carolina, a brutal result for the Pac-12, one that I think we all had a lot of hope invested into. Oregon State, before this, had a really impressive game versus Notre Dame that went back and forth to earn their way to the Elite Eight. South Carolina, obviously the undefeated juggernaut coming from truck stop land. And this one was a showdown the whole way through. Some tough calls in the first half, went against Oregon State. They shot well, they battled, you know, showcased kind of that mental fortitude that they'd had all year. But ultimately, our Beavlet came up just shy, losing 70-58 to South Carolina. Avery, take it away. What were your thoughts on this one?
I don't want my first thoughts to be like yelling about the officiating, but I feel like it's so hard to discuss this game without mentioning that. And that's just not coming from someone who's angry that Oregon State lost. I think it was pretty clear from everyone watching the game, whether they were South Carolina fans or just like women's basketball fans in general, the officiating was really horrible, as it seems to have been this entire month in the NCAA tournament. Like, the officiating has just been terrible. It was really, really bad in this game. It made this game unwatchable, which was really frustrating, because I think that these two teams could have been this could have been an all-timer. This could have been one of the best games of the season, but there was a whistle every 10 seconds. And that was just fucking brutal. It killed all momentum and all interest. And man, some of those calls are just like, I have no idea what they were thinking. I don't know what they were watching.
Yeah, exactly. They said it best on the halftime show. The announcers were insufferable. The halftime show was great. They said, referees, get out of the way in the second half. Let them play. That's how I felt too. Especially, it was frustrating because South Carolina's, you know, marketed as this physical defensive teams. Their guard play, you know, was certainly hounding defensively. And I'm cool with that, totally. Like, respect to them. They clearly, you know, did have an advantage of that in that front. But it was especially frustrating given that South Carolina is playing a physical brand of basketball, and yet it's Oregon State's two stars that pick up three fouls in the first half, in Reagan Beers and Tamia Gardner. And so many questionable calls went into that. The last one on Reagan Beers, just, you know, South Carolina offensive player just kind of lowering her shoulder and forearm into Reagan Beers and bowling her over pretty much. They call it on Reagan Beers for falling over. And it was especially frustrating because Tamia Gardner had her third called on her a few minutes earlier in kind of an inverse situation. So it was, that part of it was incredibly frustrating. And just kind of to speak to, I guess, my general philosophy on the game, tip my cap to South Carolina, definitely. They especially had a dominant third quarter where they kind of showed their, you know, superiority in this game. But I was frustrated because in the first half, Oregon State did a lot of the things, absent the refereeing, that they needed to do to win this game. you know, shooting from three. Lily Hansford, I think she had three of her four makes from behind the arc came in the first half. They were completely out shooting South Carolina. I think at half, Oregon State was shooting like 40 or 45% from three. South Carolina was still in the teens. So a lot of things were going right for Oregon State to be ahead in the game. And yet it felt like the refereeing was a big part of the reason why they were down four at half. And ultimately, I think that turned a really impressive South Carolina third quarter from the difference that would have, you know, been a comeback for South Carolina and maybe put them ahead by five going into the fourth to something that felt like kind of a kill shot.
Yeah, it just completely ended it. I think Oregon State had six threes in the first half. They were doing everything right, and it just felt like the refs couldn't get out of the way. And it's just really frustrating because even if Oregon State lost in like a fair game, I would have preferred that. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm upset Oregon State lost, but I would have preferred to watch a fun basketball game that didn't make me want to throw my TV remote at the wall every 5 seconds because it just, it was absolutely brutal.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hard way for this to end.
Exactly. Like, everyone knew this was going to be a fight, obviously. We knew the odds were stacked against Oregon State, but it was frustrating to not get a fair shot for this team. You still have to look back on Oregon State's season, a team that was picked 10th in the preseason poll by media, and how they showed, you know, they were every bit competitive with the class of the Pac-12 this year throughout. It was really impressive to see how they kind of grew together throughout the season and came into this game, you know, in a game where it's, yeah, you know, South Carolina's going to win 7 times out of 10, but Oregon State really gave them a shot, competed throughout it, showed up for the big moment, didn't get pushed around. So I was proud of Oregon State in this performance. I was really proud of how they played against Notre Dame as well. I thought that was a fantastic game. Do you have any more thoughts kind of on this season as a whole?
Oh, yeah, we didn't really get to talk about the Notre Dame game. That was a really fun game to watch, and like definitely one of those moments where I'm glad it was on a national stage, because we've been watching Oregon State this entire season and we knew that they've been capable of this and we've known about their story. So it was really exciting to see them play the way they did against Notre Dame and have other people finally like actually being like, oh, wait, Oregon State might be good. I will say it was a little bit. Sorry, my dog. It was a bit overshadowed by the situation with refereeing again, where the officials decided that a nose ring needed to... Hannah Hidalgo had a nose ring that she's been playing with all season, that she played with in the beginning of the NCAA tournament. She played an entire first half of this game against Oregon State. She played the first two games in the NCAA tournament, but now the nose ring's an issue and everything needs to be stopped so this nose ring can come out.
Yeah, the handling of this women's tournament in general has been a bit ridiculous in a few spots. There's the refereeing issue where someone was refereeing a game of their alma mater. Now,
oh yeah, yeah. What the fuck?
Got removed at halftime, and now I think probably the most hilarious one and disappointing one as well is the situation going on at the Portland Regional right now,
where
the 3-point lines are literally a different distance. And it's blatant. I went to a game yesterday and I didn't notice it then for whatever reason, but it's shocking seeing the pictures on social media now. Like, how did I not notice that? There is like twice as big of a gap between the top of the key and the 3-point line on one end.
I mean,
as there
I understand
is on the other.
I understand you not noticing it, because like, why would that be the case? Like, why would you think to like look at that and be like, that's different? But when you know that there's a difference and you can like actually look at the picture of the court, it's like probably 18 inches.
Yeah. Well, that was
unbelievable.
That was the funny thing, is I saw the first thing I saw on social media was a pic of just one of the ends and then bringing out the tape measure. I'm like, oh my God, this is so silly. Some player was like, oh, I'm not sure if this is right, you know, and now they're bringing up a tape measure. it's probably fine. Like, they wouldn't mess this up. And then you see the picture of the whole court and you're like, oh, holy shit. Why are they even bringing out the tape measure? Yeah. It's like clear to the naked eye that this is completely off. And just hilarious that no one noticed it playing on the court before, almost. Like, I'm surprised it got to this point where we've played, four games already in Portland. And this was the first time, but.
It's just so frustrating because it's like, why are we not taking this tournament as seriously as it deserves to be taken?
Right.
Like, in a lot of ways, this is better basketball than what we're seeing on the men's side. Like, everybody kind of agrees that the men's season has kind of been, there's no, like, truly, like, there's not, like, a group of elite teams like there has been with the women's.
Yeah.
And so for this to happen is just, like, seriously, who... What is this is not a JV basketball tournament. What is going on right now?
Right. It's just a lack of care. And I'm sad that Portland's name is being probably dragged through the mud a little bit as a result of it, being that it's hosted in Portland. To me, it's all on the NCAA, ultimately.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and someone's job was to do that. I have no idea who's. But back to the Oregon State Notre Dame game. That one was fascinating to me because it was such an uneven game in all of these individual categories. Like, Oregon State shoots 60% from the field. Notre Dame shoots 35%. But Oregon State has 26 turnovers and Notre Dame only has 5. But Oregon State has 42 rebounds and Notre Dame only has 24. So it's like these teams were both blowing each other out in individual categories, and it in totality results in a 5-point game that was, very close right up until the end of it. Oregon State pulls away in the end. I think the play of the game was with in the final minute there, Oregon State's up 2. And I think it was Talia von Alhoffen who, as the clock's winding down, kind of swings around the key, finds Reagan Beers at the last second, and Reagan Beers puts it off glass for 2 points to kind of stretch the lead to 2 possessions and box out the rest of the way. So super impressive win from Oregon State. Impressive season, as we said. Even, in my opinion, an impressive showing today against South Carolina. It was just unfortunate that it didn't feel like a fair fight at some times. It felt like South Carolina was getting kind of that big brand treatment, and the Beaver bias was certainly apparent.
Yeah, definitely. I wish we could have seen an even game to know what would have happened, but
yeah,
that's sports, I guess.
Exactly. Can't be mad at this season for Oregon State overall, certainly. We mentioned the only other team left on the women's side, one we probably should dive into, USC. They played a hard-fought game against the 5 seed in their region, Baylor. Won that game 74-70 on Saturday night. They have their Elite Eight matchup coming up on Monday, also in Portland. Hopefully the 3-point lines will be fixed by then. in this one, as you'd expect, Juju Watkins led the team with 30 points, but shot 8-for-28. From the field, and I think her uneven performance there is kind of what kept the door open for Baylor and made this a bit more uncomfortable than Pac-12 sickos would have liked coming down to it. How did you feel about this game, Avery?
Yeah, this was a pretty worrying game, in my opinion. I felt like USC was not in it in the way that I would hope them to be. Obviously, like, I'm not going to sit here and get angry at Juju for her attempts, because that's just every game, right? She sometimes has a scary looking percentage, but she always has like 25-30 points, so I mean, it works out. But I mean, they survived. I think it's one of those situations where could have cleaned that up quite a bit, could have gotten some better shots, but they made it out of it. And I really am scared going into the UConn game tomorrow, because they just didn't look their best, which is the USC we've been seeing all season. They kind of live and die by Juju. And this is one of those games where they could have gotten got. So they survived. And I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I pretty much have the same feelings. I felt like USC is kind of a bit uneven for a while in these performances. Like, you know, Juju just shoots at such a high volume. And so that means that they're largely dependent on if she's on or not. I think we had that very inspiring performance in the Pac-12 title game against Stanford, where the rest of that group really stepped up. And we felt like, okay, if you can marry a great Juju game with that type of performance from Mackenzie Forbes and Raya Marshall and the surrounding pieces, USC can look like the best team in the country. And I still feel that way. If they can survive game by game, I think they have a chance to, you know, if Juju Watkins goes nuclear against South Carolina and the surrounding pieces shoot 45% from three, they can definitely win that game and win it going away, even in my mind, because Juju Watkins just is that good as a singular force, and she creates the space where the rest of these players can have a good shooting night and be almost unbeatable. At the same time, when things aren't going well, it gets pretty scary, because if Juju doesn't have it like she usually does, there's not much of a recourse. So she just keeps shooting through it. And the other team on the it really opens the door for the other side to kind of get into a game and steal one against them. And there's not going to be any easy opponents left, clearly. It's UConn, then it's the winner of Iowa LSU, then it's probably South Carolina in the title game if they get that far. How are you feeling about the outlook for USC, I guess, the rest of the way?
I mean, UConn, I'm not going to pretend like I'm locked in on UConn, but I know they're a much more consistent team, and that's always scary. I will say Juju is really fucking clutch. She was in this game. It was painful to watch the game because, you know, she's such a high volume shooter and a lot of them don't fall. But at the end, I feel like she went on a run just by herself, and she does that a lot. So I've seen USC just has a really high ceiling, because when Juju has an amazing game, it's kind of an unstoppable force. So I don't feel bad about USC going into it. I also don't want to, after this game, like, expect them to make a run to the national title either. Like, I have them picked in my bracket to win it, and I'm like, ooh, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah.
They can.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to feel hopeful after this game. This is just, like, kind of a letdown, even though they won, which is weird to say.
Yeah, I feel very much like it's survive in advance. Having Juju always gives you a chance. Like, she is that trump card where if she wants to play like the best women's basketball player in the country, then it's going to be hard to beat them. But she can't always, you can't always count on her to do that 100% of the time, and because they're so dependent on her, you never know. So it's exciting. It makes, I think, USC women's basketball, if it wasn't already, you know, it's must watch TV from this point on going into the Elite Eight in a lot of high profile matchups against, you know, you've got the biggest brand of the last decade in UConn, then you have whoever you get out of Iowa LSU, you know, there's going to be a lot going on there in terms of narratives and a lot of eyeballs. And yeah, obviously South Carolina speaks for themselves at this point. Elsewhere, we had a bit of a tragic Sweet 16 for the Pac-12 women's side, I gotta say. There were a lot of, you know, chance of, can we get four teams in the Final Four? You know, what's it going to be? And I felt like kind of some duds throughout. The biggest one, the three teams that I'm talking about that fell, were Stanford falling 77-67 to NC State, a game I was at. Iowa beat Colorado 89-68. I was sad about that one. Obviously, Colorado started the season beating LSU. Could have gotten a rematch there, and certainly would have had a shot in that game since they'd done it already. And then the last one, definitely a heartbreaker, the LSU-UCLA game, in my mind. Where do you want to attack first from these three matchups? What were kind of your biggest takeaways? What was most surprising to you?
Carlos was talking about it on Twitter, and it's something we've discussed a lot throughout the season. It really felt like the Pac-12 had several teams that could be national title contenders, and it really fell flat in the Sweet 16. I wasn't one of the people that actually thought that the Pac-12 was going to have four teams in the Final Four. That's just wishful thinking. But I did expect more of these teams to make it out of the Sweet 16. I guess we can start with Stanford NC State because that was the first game you were there. Did you feel like you had a better read on what was going on because you were there?
Yeah, I think a trend we've talked about all year were guard play struggling for Stanford one, and then how they handle the big situation, because Kiki Arioffen and Cameron Brink felt so clearly like their two best players. They don't play them enough, and foul trouble played into this in this game. And I think the fact that they have, you know, they're two bigs who have some redundant skill sets and like to work in similar areas of the court make them a bit of a clunky fit for your two stars. Like if Stanford could swap either one of them out for a guard of the same talent level, that probably would be better for them.
Yeah.
In this game, Kiki Arioffen played 22 minutes and Cameron Brink played 23. They ended with 4 and 5 fouls, but
yeah, that's brutal.
I being there, I just felt the energy in the building. Kiki Arioffen got one foul like 30 seconds into the game. I think she had another one early. I forget the sequence of it, but she was out almost the entire first quarter. And the energy when she came back into the game in the second quarter, and just like how much more interesting and threatening their offense felt with her there, was night and day for this team. But ultimately, like, I think Stanford thought that they could just kind of, you know, tortoise their way to a win here and just like chip away and build a lead. And they did that in the second quarter, kind of spurred on by Kiki. But in the third quarter, things really felt flat. Both Arioffen and Brink got in more foul trouble. And there just isn't the guard play here to really pick them up on the other side. That was especially apparent because I hadn't watched NC State all year, but NC State's guards were exceptional in this game.
Yeah.
Isaiah James finished with 29 points. There just felt like a real athletic gap at the guard plays. And that kind of dynamism that NC State brought could only be matched on the other side by entering it into the bigs over and over and over again. And when they just weren't in the game enough to do that, Stanford kind of lost their footing in this race, and NC State pulled ahead, was my read.
It really did feel like Stanford just got straight up outplayed, which is something we've seen during the Pac-12 season.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it did feel like Stanford kind of had like a cushy path to the Pac-12 championship. And it's something that we talked about a lot, was like, is this team actually elite, or is it just because that's the way the lens that they're viewed through? You know, like, it's really easy to like look at Stanford and be like, well, they're so amazing. Tara Vandermeer and Cameron Brink, like, they're just stars in the sport. But I don't think I necessarily was very shocked by the outcome here. I didn't really see Stanford as like one of these teams in the Pac-12 that I expected to make to a national title, and like guard play is a huge part of that. So yeah, it was disappointing that they lost, but I'm not gonna lie, Stanford, I haven't thought highly of Stanford in this tournament to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's a bummer, but
I just felt like sitting there, like, Kiki Arioffen and Cameron Brink are just so amazing. And I was like, oh my God, could we just get them on one of the other women's teams? Like, could we, you know, seriously? Could we move these bigs over and like, spread things out? If Colorado had Kiki Arioffen, like, that would be so much more fun.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
If Cameron Brink stayed closer to home and went to Oregon State, I mean, there'd be a bit of a overlap with Reagan Beers. But also, if either of them got in foul trouble, having the other one to go to would be, a pretty awesome replacement. So anyways, it was tragic. I think a lot of the flaws we've talked about with Stanford all year long just kind of showed up in the biggest moments. And so it wasn't a shocking result. I guess we can move on to LSU, UCLA, probably the next biggest one. UCLA, a team that, you know, we expected this game to be close, but certainly everyone felt UCLA had a real chance to win and move on to the Elite Eight, and a potential to get out of their region against Iowa if they got there. What was your read on this game? It felt like a back and forth to me. And at the end, I'll say I felt like there were some questionable calls at the end a little bit, too. I think LSU is certainly a bigger brand this year as well. But we've also seen UCLA falter before in big moments late in game. So I couldn't give them kind of a free pass for that either.
It felt like UCLA was throwing away possessions left and right. They had 32 three-point attempts. 32! LSU had 5. LSU sounded like a big three-point shooting offense, I don't think, but 32, 7 for 32. Mm-hmm. That's, why are you still shooting those? I feel like that was a lot of the discourse I saw on the timeline, too, was just like, they weren't coming up with anything creative, and they were just like throwing up prayer shots, which to me, looking at the box score after the fact and thinking about like how many possessions it felt like they threw away on these shots, it was a much closer game than it felt like UCLA kind of played themselves out of it.
Yeah.
If they kept doing what was working, which was not the 3-point shooting, they might have been like in a better situation. I don't know. UCLA is such a weird team because at different points in the season, I genuinely thought this is the best team in the country. And it feels like the way they finished the season was just kind of like underwhelming. There was no like lights out basketball from them. It's just very weird. Like, I don't know what happened to UCLA where they went from like genuinely looking like they could beat anyone in the country to going 7 for 32 from the 3-point line.
Yeah, I feel like they just don't have that like singular identity and person to command the offense that mm-hmm. like LSU, Flauge Johnson just looked like the best player on the court to me and like a tier above everyone else. And I think UCLA's six, their starters, and Hawkes off the bench, like those six, probably six of the best 10 players in this game, maybe, but none of them were on the tier that Flauge Johnson was in this game. And, you know, obviously Angel Reese certainly, you know, did her thing as well. I thought there was a questionable call that she got late in this game where I think she hit Lauren Betts on the head on a layup and they credited the foul to someone else on LSU. It would have taken Angel Reese out of the game.
Right.
And to some degree I'm okay with it. Like I don't like that, but I just want the refs to stay out of the game. And it's annoying when they stay out of the game for one team, but they don't give a shit about the other team because they haven't watched the Pac-12 all season. And they don't know that Lauren Betts should have star power, you know, in the same way that like these other teams are getting treated with that kind of star power whistle.
Maybe I'm just being like a crying Pac-12 fan, but it really did feel like they were calling in favor of LSU. I don't want to be like that because that's so fucking annoying to sit on here and be like, oh, the refs, they wanted LSU to win. But it did feel like they were giving Kim Mulkey what she wanted on every call, and which is so, I fucking hate her. She's the most infuriating person in college basketball. I cannot stand her. And yeah, like it definitely feels like there's narratives that need to be pushed. And it's frustrating to be on like the opposite end of that and to be feeling like the effects of that as someone who didn't want LSU to win this game.
Right. And it feels like it's all downstream of just the access issue for Pac-12 teams. Like I think if mm-hmm. if these teams were on ESPN, I mean, Juju Watkins certainly like has star power. I think Cameron Brink and Kiki Uriofen have star power, and on down the list, like plenty of players in this league, if they just had that level of exposure, you know, on big networks in their biggest games, I think would be gravitated to more, but it just hasn't happened. And it's sad to see that kind of rear its head, at this stage in the tournament. I think it's tough. I saw Carlos tweeting out these teams were worn down from Pac-12 play. You know, I think he's just doing a bit of propaganda there, but it's an interesting thing. Like, are they worn down going into the tournament? I think we were puffing our chests a bit and saying they're battle tested. They've seen more of these games than other teams. It's going to show through in the big moments. And it hasn't quite so far. Another trend that I saw throughout these four losses for the Pac-12, the Oregon State loss and the three Sweet 16 losses, the last one being Colorado and Iowa. In every game, the Pac-12 team shot more three-pointers than their opponent. It seems like maybe a stylistic difference in this league versus others. I wonder if that kind of rears its head here as, jump shooting, making this thing less sustainable as
Definitely
we get into March. Yeah.
Did you see the stat about back to the court, the three-point line discourse,
yeah,
about how Stanford was like 2 from 13 when they were shooting on that, the one, I think the longer side of the court, and NC State was like 2 for 7.
That's interesting. So in the second half there, was NC State probably, they were going on the shorter,
yeah, I think
three
it was
point
reversed,
line
so
in
yeah
the second half.
Whichever, yeah, whichever half, the one that they were on was, they were worse on the same side of the court. I don't know which, yeah, side, if it was the shorter or the longer, but it's interesting.
Definitely.
It's hard to be a good from the three-point line when it changes, right?
Yeah, definitely hard to be good when it changes. It's just ridiculous that that's factoring into it. I mean, that feels like we're in a rec gym or something. Like, what? I don't think I've ever even been in any gym in my life where the three-point lines have been inconsistent on both lines. Like, that, you say it's a rec game, but it would even feel absurd if you walked in a rec game, in a rec gym, and the lines were different. I just don't understand how that happened. Elsewhere, yeah, Colorado lost 89-68 to Iowa.
This one was
there was not much hurdle. Hope in this game. Caitlin Clark, 29 points, 15 assists. She did not get limited as we hoped by Jalen Sherrod. Arizona was in this tournament. They won their first game in the play-in game, but lost to, was it Syracuse in the round of 64?
Yeah.
And elsewhere, Utah, your Moose, lost to Gonzaga 77-66 in the round of 32. What could have been with Yana Neepkins there, right?
I
don't
know.
Any other thoughts on this display from Pac-12 women's basketball?
I mean, I guess it's just sad. It's a sad way to go out. I guess we had a lot of teams playing in the Sweet 16, so it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
I suppose I expected a lot more from the Pac-12 and their performance, and maybe it was bias against them. Maybe it was just unlucky. Who knows? I wish we could have gotten more teams into the Final Four, but I guess we'll see with USC what they do.
Yeah, I want to have the energy to say this is not a referendum on Pac-12 women's basketball. We're going to be back and don't write this league off, but the league doesn't exist anymore.
It's gone. So, it's over.
So
what the fuck?
There's no point in being like, oh, well, yeah, see us next year. We didn't get the bounce of the ball in a few of these games, but things are trending in the right direction in this league, you know, is not done being
so
heard
sad
from. But we quite literally are done being heard from, aside from USC. Go Trojans. They're carrying the torch, but it also feels like the magic is slowly fading on this thing a bit as well.
Did you see the story that was put out about Oregon State women's basketball and how they'll pick up the pieces of the Pac-12 falling apart that came out before their game against South Carolina?
No, I didn't see that. I just saw some discourse around a question that was asked to them about players transferring and stuff. But what was that piece about?
It was literally talking about like how will Oregon State look in like the West Coast Conference? Like how will their team survive?
Yeah.
The fall of the Pac-12, and it's just like ridiculous timing. Like,
right,
you couldn't have waited a week until they were out of the tournament. They're still playing. They're playing in the Elite Eight. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
It's like dancing on a grave.
Right. And just trying to turn them into, turn them into some charity case when they are literally playing. Like, can we just write
right there,
write about their chances to win the game that they're about to play?
Exactly.
And one thing that was ridiculous in Oregon State, they were, I think it closed as 6-point underdogs to Notre Dame and 16-point underdogs to South Carolina. Absurd. I mean, that just is, if you watch the games, that just was a blatantly miscorrect line. And I don't know. I don't know what the process is to make those in women's basketball compared to, like, you know, I more know about the football side of that stuff, obviously. So I don't know where that comes from. Probably some sort of weird power ranking thing. As we exposed on the last episode, there was literally in the ESPN power rating, they penalized teams for playing at altitude.
I mean, it turns out they are right about the Mountain West. The Mountain West fucking sucked this year in the tournament, but it's a ridiculous reason to penalize teams. I don't even know. It's so absurd.
I'm just upset at this point. Well, anyways, that's it. That's what we have on the women's side. Do not go anywhere. We are coming right back on the other side to talk about Arizona's Final Four run. I hear they're still in the tournament, right? As well as the rest of the action on the men's side. So we'll see you right after this.
No Truck Stops has a new sponsor, and they are Project Repat. Project Repat turns your old t-shirts into a quilt. I got a quilt. I actually went to Project Repat first and bought one of these and absolutely loved the quality of this quilt. I have a lot of old Pac-12 t-shirts laying around. I don't use a lot of them. Some of them I did wear, but I kind of really wanted them on the quilt. And so I decided to put together this quilt and send an order to Project Repat. I paid for it out of my own money because I really, really wanted one. And it is fantastic. This is funny. I have a green screen. You can't see the Oregon one. It's actually black, so kind of interesting. But I've got all of these t-shirts that I've accumulated over the years from different Pac-12 schools on this t-shirt quilt. And it is fantastic. They have a lot of customization options. You got a lot of options for how to stitch the thing together. You can even, like I did, organize how exactly you want the blanket put together. I really wanted all the UCLA stuff at the bottom because I have a lot of UCLA shirts. And I wanted the more Pac-12 shirts at the center. So I basically designed this blanket myself, and Project Repat stitches it all together and sends it back to me in a really convenient way. I had a lot of fun doing this. I think it was a fun little project. You just cut out your t-shirts that you want on the quilt and send it into Project Repat. Project Repat stitches it all together, sends it back. It was a great experience, and I have a lot of memories with all of these old t-shirts. Some of them don't fit me anymore. Some of them are just worn out, and I wanted a way to hang on to them and to remember all of the things about the Pac-12 that I came to love. For example, this Made for Final Four t-shirt is one that I no longer wear. It was sitting at the bottom of my drawer. And that's when UCLA went to the Final Four in 2021. It's a fun time. Went to the Pac-12 basketball tournament last year. Got this Pac-12 basketball tournament t-shirt. And again, not something I wear on the regular, but it's a memory that I wanted to immortalize. So got this really cool blanket. Mine is fleece. You can get it in a number of different materials. You can get a number of different organizations and arrangements of your t-shirts. It's really, really cool. Go check out Project Repat at projectrepat.com and tell us how you like it. Pac-12 sickos, it is women's basketball season. If you have not been keeping up with the Pac-12 women's basketball, you haven't been listening to our episodes, Pac-12 women's hoops is on a damn heater. They have several top 10 teams. They look like they have four of the best teams in the country, maybe five of the top six or seven. Pac-12 women's basketball is on another level, and you should support your women's teams by going to Homefield and buying one of their shirts. One of my favorite shirts right now in the Homefield UCLA collection is this UCLA women's basketball shirt commemorating their 1978 national championship. It is a gorgeous shirt. It's got this lovely cream color, this vintage 1970s logo and design. It's gorgeous. It's super soft. It's super comfortable. I really enjoy it. There's a lot of really great shirts out there commemorating women's basketball all across the Pac-12. You should go check that out. These shirts are comfortable. They're incredible. They're great to look at. I get comments on them all the time, people being like on the streets just saying, where'd you get that shirt? That's cool. Especially if you live in a college town where people actually care about these things. I think you'd stand out. Go check that out at homefieldapparel.com. You can save if you're a first-time customer by entering the code NOTRUCKSTOPS23 at checkout.
We are back. Let's lead it off here, talking about those Arizona Wildcats, the lone team that we felt maybe, if you hadn't been paying attention the last few tournaments, had a chance to go on a run. Yet here we are again with a Tommy Lloyd team falling short, not making it to the Elite Eight. This time it came against Clemson, the sixth seed in their region. Arizona fell 77-72 on Thursday night. A head-scratching performance, yet one that felt all too familiar. 3 points from Kylan Boswell, a 5-for-18 performance from Caleb Love, 2-for-9 from Pelle Larsen. A lot of things fell apart in this game. What were your takeaways from Arizona? Same old in March. Is there anything new to take away from this game?
This game felt like 3 years ago. I know. I feel like I've watched so much basketball. I'm trying to like rack my head through my brain and be like, what the fuck happened? Normal Arizona choking. I think that's what it was. It's just like they kind of let us down. There's a lot of complaints about Tommy Lloyd in this game. Felt like Caleb Love was really quiet. I don't know. I mean, I expected more from Arizona, but also should I have expected more? Are we just in a pattern that I need to stop thinking will change?
Yeah, I think that's right. This team's weird. I you know, in talking to Arizona fans, like I think the ones who really follow it, some of our friends have said, this isn't one of our best teams. This isn't better than last year's team, or certainly not the 2022 team. But they still managed a two seed in a year where things felt kind of wide open. They got a North Carolina team as the one seed in the region that wasn't that great, ended up losing. Like, it was an open path for them. You know, they played a six seed. Like, so you can say, this isn't our best Arizona team, and yet it's not unreasonable to expect them to beat this Clemson team probably. Another good team. It felt like a close game, but I think it's undoubtedly still disappointing to come up short in it. And what I'll remember about this Arizona team, they don't have any like super special players in my mind. I think Caleb Love is so good when he's on, but he's the epitome of a high volume player who went 0-for-9 from 3 in the game. And when he's off, who else on this team is even, I don't know, like a first, one of the 5 best players in the Pac-12 or something, or 10 best players in the Pac-12? Like some people
say it's Omar Ballo, but it's like, he's not great. He's really not.
Yeah. He is not a top 3 big in the Pac-12 in my mind, really.
No.
And the rest of the, like Kylan Boswell looked good at times, but he had a few disappearing acts that people certainly have got on him for. And then Pelle Larsen and Keyshaw Johnson, in my mind, are good players, but they're both kind of glue guys in a way. Like, you know, Keyshaw Johnson, his defense, I think, has brought a lot to this Arizona team. But at the same time, you can't hit the panic button against Clemson and say, all right, clear out for Keyshaw. Like, that doesn't work. it inevitably just goes to, well, it looks like today Kylan Boswell doesn't really want it. So Caleb Love, let's have you initiate the offense. And he ends up chucking threes. And if he's not making them, his brain doesn't really compute for what else to do.
Right.
So looking towards the future, I mean, Jane Bradley stepped up and had 18 points off the bench. I am excited to see what's next for him and KJ Lewis. I think they're talented. Certainly, they could grow into those type of players that can lead this team and, you know, be more solid, like maybe a Benedict Mathurin was in 2022. But at the same time, we talked all year of, like, I mean, Carlos would not let us live it down. Of, I don't care what they're doing now. I won't care about anything until we get to March. Here we are in March, and they lost to Clemson, a 6 seed. When they had an open path to the Final Four.
And Clemson is an embarrassing 6 seed to lose to. Like, I think they were tied for 5th place in the ACC. They lost the first round of the ACC tournament to Boston College. Like, this, I don't know. It's not like this is some underseeded team that made it in that's, like, actually really good and the committee wasn't watching their games.
Yeah.
This is a very beatable team, and you couldn't fucking shoot the ball. What were they, like, 36%?
Yeah, from the 37% from the field, 18% from 15, three.
18 from three. Like, it's just absolutely brutal. And for a team that kind of steamrolled through the Pac-12 outside of Washington State, like, they were clearly the best team in the Pac-12. There's always the conversation there, but, like, one of the two best teams in the Pac-12, I don't think it's wrong to expect them to be a team like Clemson. They were kind of set up to actually make a run. They were in probably the best position as a 2 seed in the entire tournament, and they just couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to parse through, what if that is their shooting? I mean, certainly, like, if Caleb Love had a really good game, they win, you know, because that's how it goes with him. Right. But how sustainable was that? And I think he's a hired gun, but what does this look like going forward in terms of their pace, especially? Can they build something more sustainable? You said that Arizona was the best team in the Pac-12 all year. That is a blatant lie. Oregon was the best team in the Pac-12 this year.
You're right. They won the Pac-12.
Oregon won the Pac-12 tournament. But yeah, let's get to the Ducks. They had an electric performance against South Carolina to open their tournament. Jermaine Cousinard had 40 points to open
so
this thing.
So fucking good.
Did you hear the story about his family too? I think it was his mom who didn't love flying. So she had not been to see a game of his at Oregon in his entire time. But they're from the greater Chicago area and, you know, did the road trip to Pittsburgh along with, like, he had a big group of family there. And he showed out. I mean, Cousinard looked like one of the best players in the country over this 2-game stretch for Oregon and completely kind of transformed things for them. That 40-point game against South Carolina was massive. And I guess I'll just get into the other side of it, too. Next game, they play Creighton, the 3 seed. Oregon had great control of this one as well. For a time, it was back and forth the whole way. But with less than a minute left, they're up 2 with the ball, passing it in. Creighton has a foul. Freshman Kwame Evans passes the ball to Nfali Dante. He misses the front end of a 1-1. Creighton ties it, goes to overtime. Throughout the entire second half and overtime of this game, 2 points scored by players not named Jermaine Cousinard and Nfali Dante. Not going to be enough to get it done.
It's fucking brutal. You need somebody else to do something. Please, anyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, it really felt like it was Oregon's game. And when it went to overtime, it's just was like, oh, God, there it is.
I know.
It's done.
Exactly.
It's they can't win this. And I mean, I want to be upset about it, but considering that they were even there was really impressive.
I know.
Like, the way they handled South Carolina in the first game was like, they destroyed them. They fucking owned them. Jermaine Cousinard was their daddy. I'm like not mad about Oregon because they weren't supposed to be there.
Totally.
And they did more than, like, it felt like most of the other Pac-12 teams. I know we started 6-0, but it was like, I definitely felt like Oregon, obviously Arizona made it to a Sweet 16, but, like, it definitely felt like Oregon was more impressive than what Washington State did, or, you know, obviously what Colorado did. So,
yeah, it really felt like Oregon was right there in this game. Like, if you if you run that game, if you sim that game 10 times, I feel like Oregon wins five or six of them.
That fucking free throw. Yep,
I know.
They make that free throw. Dante makes the free throw.
Yeah.
And it's so hard because I don't want to sit here and be like, make your fucking free throws. He had 28 points in the game.
Yeah.
He was one of two players that did anything, it felt like, in that game. So it's not going to be just on his shoulders. But it was really just so close to them being in a Sweet 16.
I know. And who knows what would have happened from there. But this Oregon team, I mean, they did round into form. And over this last stretch from the Pac-12 tournament, like, they looked like a top 25 team. It was a, it was a legitimate game against Creighton. Obviously, the rest of the players didn't step up. And Fala Dante and Jermaine Cousinard are out of eligibility. They'll be gone next year. Shellstad, it was brutal. He went down with an injury in overtime. And he felt like the only other candidate on the team who was like, okay, if everyone else is gassed, there is a world where Shellstad can get hot and carry us home. Like, that's the only hope here, really. And once he went down, I was like, all right, no one else is creating here. I mean, no hate, but Kwame Evans, Brennan Rigsby, how many minutes did they combine for? Let's all take a second. Think about it. It was 81 minutes. 81 combined minutes.
That's so bad.
And
oh god.
Part two of this trivia. How many points did Kwame Evans and Brandon Rigsby combine for? Zero.
How many points? Oh god. Truly useless. Brennan Rigsby is like such a funny player because you see him on the court and you're like, oh yeah, that's the cold white boy. Clearly, that's no, he's not.
Yeah.
Well, he is extra cold, I suppose, and as in will not make any shot ever.
He had
he just kind of is a body out there.
Yeah, he had an electric dunk against Georgia in the season opener, and that carried him a long way. If we could have, man, if we could have just swapped Rigsby for. Talk about cold white boys. Creighton has a surplus over there. If we could have got any of them, Baylor Shireman, come on, come over to the side of the light. Yeah, you know, that's what it was. To be fair, those two only attempted five shots in the game, so like it wasn't that they just like could not make anything, but it was just like the lack of responsibility that everyone else felt offensively to the point where like Jermaine Cousinard and Infali Dante attempted 53 shots for Oregon in that game combined, like an absurd number. And that's what it was. It was a valiant effort. I'm not too torn up about it. But I am curious, like how could this have gone if Infali Dante just made those free throws, or we passed to someone else who, you know, we passed to Cousinard and he made the free throws and Oregon advanced. What would the game with Tennessee have looked like?
I mean, they probably would have lost Tennessee.
They probably would have lost, but I did feel like Oregon, you know, showed life in the end of the season and was a puncher in all those games. Elsewhere, Washington State lost their game to their two seed, Iowa State, 67-56. Not a terrible effort in my mind. Again, this is a long time ago, but Washington State took a lead early in this game. They fought hard. I felt like it was a bummer of a draw that they were playing Iowa State to begin with. Like, it would have made a difference if Washington State's a four or five seed, do they make a Sweet 16? I definitely think they could have. But being a seven seed and playing against a two seed that was handling their business in this game, they just didn't quite have it. And sadly, their coach then left for the Stanford job shortly after. And now Miles Rice is in the transfer portal. I'm not sure what the status of all the rest of their roster is right now. I know Miles Rice, their best player, probably is in the portal. And they're going to lose a few other pieces as well. So tough to see that for the Cougs, certainly thinking of them.
It's a really bad thing going forward for Washington State, because like the one thing you always had with Kyle Smith is you know he could find something. He could find guys to get something, to get a team that was capable. Like obviously Washington State beat Arizona twice with no returning starters, I believe, from last season. Like these are players that he didn't have. There was a lot of loss in the transfer portal. But now with Kyle Smith leaving, yeah, it's tough. It's really hard to see.
Yeah.
Kyle Smith taking the Stanford job wouldn't be my choice, personally.
USC job's open now. It seems like that one might be better.
Oh, yeah, Andy Enfield leaving to SMU.
I know. Skipping town and pulling a Chip Kelly, kind of, in a sense, I feel like. Hot seat's probably coming and just goes for that job.
Yeah, he knew the grift was up and he had to get out of there. It will be interesting to see what USC does.
Yep.
But yeah, Washington State just got an unlucky draw with Iowa State. Iowa State was probably the best 2 seed. A lot of people thought they should be the 4th 1 seed over UNC. So, that's unfortunate. It was a close game. I just think that's kind of been like the story of Washington State in everything is like, damn, that kind of sucks. And I'm sorry, but I'm also not, because their fans are fucking annoying. So,
yeah. Yeah. The last one, Colorado Marquette. This was another game, like not an embarrassing performance from the Pac-12 team at all. Colorado was right there with Marquette for most of this game, went down a bit at half, fought back in the second half, lost by 4 at the end. You know, KJ Simpson, Tristan Da Silva, Eddie Lampkin all showed up in this one at least. It didn't feel like anyone, like, you can't point to something and say, oh, this one player was just not himself today.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Marquette is just a better team than Colorado is. Yeah. We all knew that.
They weren't enough.
Yeah.
What Colorado was capable of doing was not enough. Like, I think it was impressive that Colorado won 2 games
right
in the tournament. Like, yeah, you weren't even really supposed to be here. Like, how did you even get into this? For a while, we thought it was just going to be Washington State and Arizona. So, obviously, winning against Boise State in, like, the play-in game and then taking down Florida was great. Marquette's a much better team.
Yeah, exactly. Not much else you can expect from Colorado. I don't know. Yeah, disappointing year on the men's side, certainly. I think we'd probably coped with that level of like we'd had adjusted our expectations on the men's side a lot more than on the women's side heading into the tournament.
Yeah.
I'm fine with what happened on the men's side. Like probably about the most likely scenario for each of these teams, if I'm being honest, yeah, going into it. I thought all of them had some juice and could win a round. I thought Arizona, you know, who knows what they could do, but if you had to peg like the median outcome for them, Sweet 16 exit probably felt like it given their history, recent history under Tommy Lloyd. So I'm fine on the men's side. You know, it is what it is. The women's side, I will be sad about for a while because, as we said, it seemed like a lot of those teams could be better. I think as we sit here at the end of the year, we're realizing, in my mind, like the teams that bowed out in the Sweet 16, Colorado, Stanford, UCLA, they were never really national titles, national title contenders to begin with. Like they flashed it at times, but I think we learned, okay, these teams have flaws that limit them from that. I still think Oregon State and USC are potentially, you know, tier 1B title contenders. We'll see on USC. Sad for how things went for Oregon State, but proud of their effort today. That's my wrap up, I guess. Any other thoughts on Pac-12 basketball?
The Pac-12. I mean, I guess we have the spring sports that we can cling to, but it's just I didn't expect like the men's season to go out with a bang. So I guess starting 6-0 was really fun for those couple days where it felt like they were unstoppable. It was a lot more than I was expecting. So I was really, really happy about that. It's just the women's side, it's unfortunate because I still think that the Pac-12 is the best league in women's basketball. And I think there's a lot of factors that went into some of those teams losing that probably could have been avoided if the NCAA cared about the women's tournament like they should. Like, especially with the situation that happened with Utah basketball in Spokane.
Yeah.
Having to deal with the racism in Idaho. Like, that's super frustrating. And definitely, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, Utah would have won their game, but I can't help but feel like that definitely impacted how they played against Gonzaga, like, after experiencing that event. That's a whole other topic. But, yeah, it's just so weird that this is the end of the Pac-12. That's the Pac-12 basketball. I mean, we'll see how USC does. This doesn't feel like USC is Pac-12, so kind of felt like Oregon State was the last actual Pac-12 game. It's a weird feeling, and I'm glad I got to experience it because the women's regular season was a ton of fun.
Yeah, definitely. It was a ton of fun. Yeah, we still got to live through our Pac-12 championships and had a great time in Vegas with everyone we saw there. And so thank you all for sticking along this ride with us. Certainly check out our Patreon. We're going to keep churning along. We have plans to cover all these teams going forward still in some form or another. But certainly a bit of a different format going forward, right? So go Trojans. Yeah. Thank you all for listening. And I guess with that, remember, there are no truck stops here.
Not even one. Still and thick with smoke, so thick it makes your toe. The crowd bows in, the coffee's kicking, and my patience to everything. Said I'm lonelier than a single sax on a quiet city street.